call this meeting to order. Ms. Williams, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Eugene Connor.
Here.
Councilmember Joan Hanson.
Here.
Councilmember Shirley Dowdy, excused. Mayor Ronald Early.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Anna Klein.
Here.
Councilmember Douglas Dunn.
Here.
Councilmember Serena Sullivan.
Here.
Justin Johnson, City Manager. Nina Williams, Deputy City Clerk. Sharon Bruno, Finance Director. Albert Chave, Police Chief. Mark Burnlight, Fire Chief. Britt Hanson, City Attorney.
Thank you very much. For the invocation, let us turn our thoughts to the people of the planet that are victims of conflict, violence, and war itself, and have a moment of silence. Thank you. Let us stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I don't have any proclamations or announcements tonight, so we will go directly a call to the public. I believe we have at least one person signed up. Sharon Rocker, you want to do call to the public, or item number one is accounts payable. Did you want to go on that one?
No.
Which one did you want to go on? Number three? Okay. We have one person called to the public. That would be Susan Blackford.
Good evening, everyone. Susan Blackford, Warren, concerned citizens of Bisbee. Tonight I am presenting a petition to this council and the city manager to consider a purchase of one or two new or newer ambulances, as was presented on item number 6 on January 5th, to look into other revenue sources besides the fire district. This idea has been on and off the agenda since 2013, when it was voted down in April by Mayor Bedall, Dave Smith, Gene Connors, and Doug Dunn, who voted this purchase down. Excuse me. Why? Think what has happened since this was done. We've had to go into our reserves. This year it was on the agenda, I think in March, and the purchase was tabled again by Doug Dunn. Why? In October, he told the fire chief and myself it was due to the fact we were getting a new ambulance from FEMA grant. I think that information was not known at that time. Why is he always wanting not to protect this town and not use the purchase of an ambulance, which has a proven revenue source for the city? If we did one in 2013, we would not be in this financial mess. I believe we must be making money with our new agreement with the Palominos Fire District. That's how it was set up. Therefore, let's take that money and buy at least one new or newer ambulance, and we will need this in addition to the new FEMA one. We lost one due to the accident last month. Thank goodness none of our great firemen were hurt. Our other ambulance has over 300,000 miles on each of them. It's been proven that we net around $900 per trip, as presented by Councilman Budge and our fire chief. The figures used by Dave Smith and presented by Doug Dunn, in my opinion, are not correct. So, City Manager, I am requesting through this petition to consider the purchase of additional ambulance with the extra money. We can hire more fire people, we need them in paramedics, and it will show that you and the council support the best fire department in this state. Last council meeting, Councilperson Hanson stated she used Jim Dixon as her source. Well, Joan, Jim Dixon, I am sorry, you guys, Jim Dixon has had an agreement to use Arizona Ambulance for years and not our own fire department. Why? That's not real support for this town, is it? Or good advice for Mr. Dixon. Remember, people, as my late mother always used to say, actions speak louder than words. Thank you.
Ms. Susan Blackbird, thank you. That concludes the call to the public. Next, we go to item number one, accounts payable. Do we have a motion?
I move that we pay accounts payable in the amount of $232,124.99.
We have a motion and a second to approve accounts payable in the amount of $232,124.99. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. Item number two, approval of the consent agenda, items A through G, and I will read those. A, approval of the reappointment of Keith Dennis to the Board of Adjustments with a waiver for number of commissions served. B, approval of the appointment of Michael McPartland to the Design Review Board with a waiver of number of commissions served. C, approval of the appointment of Robert Page to the IBISB Committee. D, approval of the reappointment of Keith Dennis to the Planning and Zoning Commission with a waiver of number of commissions served. E, approval of the appointment of Sharon Buono to the Public Safety Personal Retirement Board with a waiver for residency requirement. F, approval of the appointment of Audrey Giacomino to the Streets and Infrastructure Committee with a waiver of number of commissions served. And G, approval of a special event liquor license application submitted by the Bisbee Radio Project Incorporated, KBRP, for an event to be held at the Bisbee Royale, located at 94 Main Street, Bisbee, Arizona, Sunday, February the 6th, 2016, from 3 p.m. till 11:59 p.m., Ryan Bruce, applicant. Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve the consent agenda items A through G.
I second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda items A through G. Ms. Williams, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Connors?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Dunn?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Early?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item number three, presentation by Commissioner County Supervisor Pat Call and County Manager Jim Blahovich about an aquifer recharge project using treated effluent from the wastewater treatment facility. That would be the Bisbee Wastewater Treatment Facility. County Supervisor, Mr. Pat Call.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. Thank you for the opportunity to be here this evening. We're going to be able to dim some of those lights.
Mr. Call, could I interrupt you just a quick moment? After your presentation, we do have a few people signed up, so I just want to let them know that we will get to you.
Okay. Before I begin, I'd like to introduce my entourage this evening, who are working not too far away. So, Ms. Karen Riggs, our county engineer and director of our highways department. Mr. Jim Blahovich, who is our county administrator. Mr. Ed Gilligan, who is our deputy county administrator. And his wife, Sharon. Nice to see you. And our county civil attorney, who's wearing apparently two hats tonight, Mr. Hansen. In any case, they're the backup. What I wanted to show you all tonight is a project that we're contemplating, and the city of Bisbee and the city's effluent plays a major part in that. Before I begin, I'd like to say if you all have any questions during this presentation, it's pretty short, please feel free to interrupt me as we go through this. I will answer possibly one question before I begin, and that was asked by your city manager, Mr. Johnson, when we previewed this presentation to him, and his first question was, is it going to cost Bisbee anything? And the answer is no, so if you were worried about that as we go through this. But in any case, again, feel free to ask any questions as we go through this. What you're looking at here is a Google Earth map. This is the border here. Obviously, this is San Pedro River. North is here. South is here. The city of Sierra Vista is up in this area. The water issue in the Sierra Vista sub-watershed consists basically of two parts. One is keeping water in the river, as it's moving down through here. And the second issue revolves around what we call cone management. Underneath the greater Sierra Vista area, there is a cone of depression forming based on water use. That cone is moving generally in a northeast direction towards the Babakamari River in this area, and a smaller cone is moving sort of south and east, sort of bound towards Palominas. When I say it's moving, this could be 100 years, it could be 1,000 years, but there's definitely a cone developing underneath the general area. The discussion tonight isn't going to revolve around the cone. We're dealing with that through conservation efforts, those sorts of things, ways to save water. What I'm going to be talking about tonight has to do with keeping water in the river. We know that the San Pedro River, the flows in the river, have been declining slightly over the years. The reason why is up for discussion and argument from time to time. What we do know as a fact, according to the USGS, is that water use in the greater Sierra Vista area has had no measurable impact on the flows of the river up to this point. Obviously, if the cone of depression continues to move, it will block water from getting to the river. Other possible reasons for the decline is increased riparian vegetation. It could be lack of rain, whatever. And that's not really the point of this evening's discussion. What I want to talk to you about tonight is increasing the surface flows of the San Pedro River. As I'm sure you all know, that the surface flows of that river are critical habitat for an endangered species, the water umbel. I'm going to switch slides here. Again, you're looking more or less at the same Google Earth picture, the borders on this side. The city of Sierra Vista is up in this area, and the Hereford and Palominas and so on. These areas here, that's called Bella Vista. That's 3,000 acres. It borders the San Pedro National Conservation Area, the MCA. That was purchased, conservation easement was purchased. That was going to be a subdivision, a large development back in the mid-2000s when the economy crashed, and it's the same story with most of these properties you're going to see along here. When the economy crashed, the company went bankrupt using Fort Huachuca's Army Compatible Use Buffer money, that's ACUB money. The Nature Conservancy, acting as broker for the fort, purchased 3,000 acres. That piece of land is currently being transferred to the county, so it stays in on the public tax rolls. This piece of property right here is Riverstone. That's 1,800 acres. Again, purchased, brokered by the Nature Conservancy using ACUB money from the fort, and that's going to be transferred to the county probably within the next 3 to 6 months. Again, it borders the MCA right through here. This piece of property here is 460 acres. It is owned currently by the county. At conservation easements owned by Fort Huachuca. That retired approximately 2,500 acre feet of water use by ag pumps, which the fort got credit for. This little piece right here is called the Mansker property. That's where our pilot project for stormwater recharge was finished at the end of, or the beginning of the summer of 2014. It is working quite well. I'd be glad to talk to you more about that if you haven't seen it, or frankly, if you all haven't visited it. I know Ms. Sullivan, you've been out there, I think. I don't know if anybody else on the board has, on the council has. But in any case, that's a finished project. Down here is Horseshoe Draw. This is on private property, the Ladd Family Ranch, primarily what I'm going to be talking about tonight. And lastly, this is the City of Sierra Vista's Environmental Operations Park. It's been recharging approximately 2,000 acre feet of effluent for over a decade now. The idea with these pieces of property, if you think of them as a picket line, so that wherever it rains in this part of the valley, we're hoping to put in facilities that will capture that rain and slow it down. You'll notice that a lot of these properties, this is all sheet flow through here, a lot of these properties have major drainages out of the mountains and also out of the city of Sierra Vista. Again, the idea is to put facilities on these pieces of property that will slow the water down. Right now what happens during the monsoon season is basically are flood events. A great deal of water falls, floods into the river, and then is gone and on its way to the Gila within 6 or 7 hours of hitting this area. What we'd like to do is to slow down that water, that instead of flooding, is to detain it, give it a chance to get into the aquifer, and then slowly meter it out over the course of the next year or 2 years towards the river. The idea here is that we increase the surface flows of the river. So, putting in facilities, and each one of these projects would have a different kind of facility. But if you'll draw your attention to this area up here, collecting what we call urban enhanced recharge, water that hits the developed area of the city of Sierra Vista and moves through these large drainage areas. We slow it down, we get it underground. And by the way, in virtually every one of these areas here, depth to groundwater is as shallow as 25 feet, maybe as much as 75 feet in some other areas. So it's not very deep to put this, it's not a far stretch to imagine this water getting into the aquifer rather quickly in all of these areas. Again, that was Bella Vista in the Riverstone property, the 1,800 acres, collecting some of the stormwater that moves through this major drainage. Again, putting it underground and slowly metering it out to the river. Up in this area, this is all sheet flow. It moves across King's Ranch through the Miracle Valley area here and goes into our current pilot project. And that's worked quite well, particularly last summer when the Hurricane Odile came through. I believe that we were able to put 40 acre feet, Karen, thank you, 40 acre feet into the aquifer right next to the river. So it was well engineered. It works perfectly. We're all very pleased with it. This year, because of a lack of rain, I think our best estimates are 2 acre feet. Karen? Right. All of these, and then there's the Horseshoe Project down here. Again, I'm going to talk more about that in just a second. And then finally, the Environmental Operations Park at the City of Sierra Vista, which has been working very successfully now for well over a decade. Something to keep in the back of your mind here, or the forefront of your mind, is that all of these projects, with the exception of the Environmental Operations Park, which is dependent on effluent produced within the city of Sierra Vista at their wastewater treatment plant, every other project here depends on whether or not it rains. As we just mentioned here at the Palominas site, 1 year, because of the hurricane, we had a lot of rain. It was quite successful. This year, it's a small shadow of what it was back in 2014. All of these projects and what we anticipate trying to increase the flows of the river depend on whether or not it rains and to some degree whether where it rains. So let's move on here to the Horseshoe Project and the crux of my presentation. Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Hansen.
The three areas that are catching the rain, that's simply retaining the rain or the water and then at a later time bringing it to the San Pedro. There's no treatment or anything of the water?
No, Mr. Mayor Sampson, no, it's just stormwater. And it isn't retaining. It's, and again, state groundwater law, we're detaining. We can't retain the water completely.
Okay.
We're detaining it, hopefully, to the point where just a drop comes out of the end. But no, it's just simply stormwater.
And it's just to keep the river at a constant level, so to speak, so that
well, I don't know about constant, but certainly to increase the flows of the river. Again, as I said, we know that the flows of the San Pedro River are declining for some reason. Not dramatically, but there's no question they're declining here in the last couple of decades, I guess. So the idea here is, again, to keep those flood events from happening, get that water underground close to the river so that it's metered out over the course of a year or two or more, so that we hope that metering out will increase the flows. Don't know if we're going to maintain some sort of constant rate, but obviously we're certainly hoping to increase it. And we've done hydrologic modeling. a lot of modeling that shows that these areas, if we get the water underground at these points, will be quite effective. But again, depends on whether or not it rains and water comes through those areas. To that end, if I can get this to work, I've got a short video. What you're looking at here is, this is the Arizona Water Company's well down off of Wilson Road. These are the Naco sewer ponds over here. And this is Green Bush Draw, and this is B-plus effluent from the city of Bisbee. And right about here is the very eastern boundaries of the Ladd family ranch. This effluent's on the ranch. Get the video going again. Again, just a slow pan. I wanted to show you the amount of water that comes out of the city of Bisbee. And again, this is about 2 miles from where that wastewater is originally emptied into Green Bush Draw off of Naco Highway. This goes down about half a mile here. Those are the Chuka Mountains out there. We're looking due west at this point in time. You can see is that there is an incredible amount of water. Apparently, about wastewater treatment plant produces somewhere between 400 and 600 acre feet of B-plus effluent every year. B-plus effluent can be used for a lot of things, primarily not for potable water, but for, you can certainly recharge aquifers with it, water golf courses, dust control, things of that sort. That's not what I wanted. Alright, so I want to draw your attention to, I can't hardly see it from here, but you all see the Naco sewer pond somewhere over here? Yeah, there I guess. Again, where we were just looking, that effluent that's in Green Bush Draw, that's on the Ladd family ranch. What we're thinking about here is putting in a pipeline. Oh, there it is, I'm sorry. Moving it 7 miles across Ladd Ranch into Horseshoe Draw, putting it underground and metering it out to the river. Hydrologic modeling suggests that if we're able to put 400 to 600 acre feet of water, and this is new water, it's not owned by anybody, it's not owned by tribes, it's not owned by the state, this is new water. If we're able to put 400 to 600 acre feet of water into the ground at this place, this is Horseshoe Draw, this will have a significant and dramatic impact on increasing the flows of the entire river. Again, because it's a constant year-round source of water, not dependent on stormwater, on rain, that's why it would have such a tremendous impact on increasing those flows. I'd like to show you just another quick video of the Horseshoe Draw area. Again, that's 9 miles from where that effluent is put in at Greenbush Draw at Naco Highway. It's beautiful out there, but it's also very rugged. You get a sense of the depth of this area. This is Horseshoe Draw itself. We're facing due south. Those are the top of San Jose's up here. You can get a sense of the three people down in the wash of the size. Some of those banks are over 20 feet high. Horseshoe Draw drains. This is the end of the San Jose's here. Horseshoe Draw drains approximately 9,000 square acres out of the San Jose's. It collects an amazing amount of water. Once again, when it flows, it did not flow this year. But this is just to give you a sense of the country that we're going to. That's the draw looking due north. You can drive, you could easily put three cars together side by side on this draw in certain areas. It's huge. It's also an erosion issue, and you can't really see from this picture at this point. But again, we're looking due east, back towards Bisbee and the Knocker area. So anyway, that's just the sort of a quick picture overview. That's all I have. If you'd like to turn the lights back up. This is all conceptual at this point in time. There's an organization called the Cochise Conservation and Recharge Network, which was just started here 4 or 5 months ago. The Hereford NRCD, the City of Sierra Vista, the Nature Conservancy, the county were the initial members, and the idea with this group is that it pushes forward these stormwater capture projects that I showed you here. We really kind of stumbled on this. We knew all the bits and pieces, but no one had really put them together until we did a day-long workshop, and then it sort of dawned on all of us that we've got this amazing source of new water that's basically being wasted at this point in time, and that could be a huge benefit to the San Pedro River and the water issues of this part of the valley. I would tell you that everything seems to be falling into place in terms of the possibility of doing this, but we're right at the beginning of this project or this idea. First domino that fell, obviously, was the LADs, whether or not they wanted a pipeline that would move clear across their property, a little over 7 miles. And after discussion with the LADs, they were very amenable. They're not at all happy to see that effluent on their eastern grazing areas. They believe it doesn't really improve the grassland. In fact, they think it just does just the opposite. So they were amenable, as long as they gave us areas where we could put that pipeline across, which would work just fine. So that was the first domino. A second domino, frankly, is the city of Bisbee's effluent. There's no need for us to go any further in discussing this project if we don't have access if we don't have access to that water, that effluent. If we get access to that effluent, if we can take it and move it, apparently there's been some discussion with the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality that it would simply take an amendment to the current permit that you all have to dump it where you're dumping it there on Knocker Highway. If we get access to that effluent, we do have approximately 230,000, I believe, of money left over from the Palominas recharge project that we can put towards an engineering study. I have no idea what it would cost at this point in time, so I wouldn't be able to tell you the total cost, but we possibly have some pots of money to go after, private money, philanthropic money, that we may be able to use or apply for to build the project. The fact of the matter is that the project itself is very simple. It's not like the Palominas Recharge Project that took a lot of canals and detention basins. The water's already there. It's already been put in down at Knocko Highway. It's simply a matter of running a pipeline all the way over the Horseshoe Draw. Pipeline may not be so simple, but it's a simple pipeline. So anyway, that's kind of the broad brushstrokes on this. So I'm open to any questions.
Oh, well, I have a few, and the council might have a few. And I think the mayor and council will ask a few questions before the public comes up. A question I have is on the Ladd Ranch Horseshoe Draw. Is that on the same aquifer that where it currently is going into Greenbush Draw? Is that a different aquifer, in other words? I don't know that.
It's in the subwatershed aquifer, yes.
Okay, so where the water goes in, for clarification, just off the Knocko Highway, that's the same aquifer.
Oh, I see. It's my understanding. Anybody want to help me out on this? I'll try if you want. Karen, you come on up here. You probably know a lot.
Essentially, it is the same aquifer. What would be different is how close to the river it would be infiltrating into the ground. That, at this point, it's, 10 miles from the river. So none of that water is ever affecting, in our lifetimes, the flow in the San Pedro. If we were able to pipe it, let it infiltrate in Horseshoe Draw, that's only about a mile and a half from the river. And the groundwater modeling shows that that mound of water that would be building up under the surface would migrate toward the river and much more quickly affect the flows in the San Pedro.
Okay. So essentially means it is on the same aquifer?
I believe so.
There's
a reason why I'm asking that.
As well, we identified many years ago, Carl Roby, we just working here, identified a sub-aquifer here that at the time, Phelps Dodge verified that the water underground kind of fell into this sub-aquifer. And I think to a degree, it's also part of where the plume's moving towards the water supply. But I'm starting to guess here.
I'm not necessarily opposed to this, just some questions.
Sure.
And maybe ADEQ would have some better answers, but I think there might be a law, correct me if I'm mistaken, that you can't move large amounts of water from one aquifer area to another.
Oh, no question. You can't do interbasin transfers.
Okay.
There's no question.
Okay. Another question.
Well, we are in the same basin. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
This is the same basin.
In August of 2007, at the Country Club, and there was a dedication ceremony. I think you were the MC. Yeah. And that water was supposed to go to the golf course is where that was supposed to go. And circa it was after I left office, there were some problems that arose, at least two problems as I see it. But I wasn't in the seat at that time, so I don't know the details of that. And that water never went up there. And so there was a lot of federal money spent on that, and water never went up there. So if it is piped out to Horseshoe Draw, in the future that would eliminate ever the possibility, and that may not happen anyway, it doesn't look good, that water would be taken by the golf course. And correct me if I'm mistaken, instead of using acre feet, I'm going to use gallons. I kind of relate better to that, and I think most of the public does. I think our wastewater treatment facility processes about 350 to 400,000 gallons a day. And so is that a substantial amount per day to recharge essentially the San Pedro River?
An acre foot's 326,000 gallons. So 365 days. It's my understanding the wastewater treatment plant does between 400 and 600 acre feet. So that would be at the very low end, say about that.
Mr. Wallace is here, if you have a better number than I do.
No, you're about right. And then you're the closed, and you get up to about a million a day.
Yeah.
Okay.
A million and a half a day. So that's, but average would be about 4 to 6, just depends on flows.
Okay. Okay. And so those are the kind of the questions that I would have. My other questions, it's not in the city limits. Does the city own water? Maybe the county owns that. I mean, that's if the city would challenge that, which I don't think they would.
It's your effluent.
But I don't think that we have laws forbidding people to go down and use B-plus water if they want to.
Probably not.
Probably not.
I can just very briefly, the whole golf course saga, if you will. The Upper San Pedro Partnership got money to put in a pipeline from Naco Highway over to the golf course, their first pond there. That was done, the pipeline was laid, and the golf course owners at the time balked. They were concerned about the level of salt. I think they were somewhat concerned about the possible level of nitrogen in the effluent and their fairways and greens. Then the idea came up that, well, what if we blend it? Half groundwater, half effluent. They pump approximately 400 acre feet a year of groundwater. So that would have been fine. That would have been a 200 acre foot a year savings. But then they had a problem with the B-plus effluent to begin with. If you're using B-plus effluent, apparently the puddles have to be dry before you let golfers onto the fairways. Fort Huachuca's Mountain View Golf Course uses B-plus effluent from their treatment plant. They solved the problem by watering the back nine, so by the time golfers got to the back nine, the puddles were dried up. It's not a huge issue, but apparently it was for the owners at that point in time. So time went past. Somewhere about a year and a half ago, I started looking into this. What happened? The pipeline, the partnership had pretty much forgotten in ancient history, sort of, and thought maybe I had access to some private funds. I thought perhaps maybe we could get the project going again. The owners were amenable, or at least indicated that they were, and so we took a look at that pipeline. That pipeline from Naco Highway over to the golf course is a gravity-fed pipeline. Whoever laid the pipeline, the contractor, didn't compact the trench well enough, and they used flex hosing. And so over the last decade or a little bit less, areas sank. So what would happen is you get these high spots. So you open up the valve there, put in the effluent that would go to the golf course. It'd run for 15 minutes, but the air would accumulate in the high points and cause a blockage. Because it was gravity flow, there wasn't enough push, so only a trickle would come out the other end after the valve would be first turned on. So we hired Rutherford Diversified Industries. So we were able to use the city of Sierra Vista's camera that they use for their sewer system to look at the pipeline to get inside. We opened it up in a few areas. And it turns out we thought maybe if there were just a few areas of these high points, we could fix that. Turned out that there were at least a dozen and possibly a lot more. Well, that's kind of squelched that whole project. So that pipeline going from Naco Highway over the golf course was a huge waste of time, money, effort, and cannot ever be used without spending, the nearest we came up with was somewhere around close to $1 million to tear it up and put in solid pipe and those sorts of things. And even then, it turned out that the current owners weren't particularly interested either. So that's when we went, oh, heck, and we spent the money that we might have used to upgrade that pipeline, and we put in a smart irrigation system at the golf course, and we also put in brand new sprinklers, and it turns out that between that irrigation, smart irrigation program and the sprinklers, we're probably saving more groundwater than if we'd moved the effluent in anyway for a lot less money. So win, win, lose, some win. Anyway, that's that story. It's unfortunate, but frankly, in the end, it's worked out pretty good because we decided just to change out the sprinklers at $125 for 400 or something.
There was a massive amount of money spent on that particular project.
Yes.
A massive amount. Yep. I'm hesitant to even say what the contractor got on that, but that was a disaster, actually.
Yep.
I might have a few more questions, but questions from the council. Council Member Hansen.
Okay, I'm not real familiar with all the terminology, but I just wanted to ask if the groundwater is considered the San Pedro, correct? So we're basically doing a recharge into groundwater. Is that correct?
You mean the river itself?
Yeah.
Basically, the river uses groundwater, doesn't replenish it. The river the primary way this river flows, about, if my memory's correct, somewhere around 87% of the flow of that river is due to groundwater coming up from the bottom and in from the sides. Once it hits the river itself, then that water flows out of the MCA.
Okay.
And heads north.
So you're recharging the river, not...
What we're doing is recharging the aquifer next to the river.
Okay.
With the stormwater and if there's effluent.
Is there any concern with health issues or contamination or anything of doing that?
No, none at all. Your B-plus effluent, for example, if we were to take that and put it in the river, City of Sierra Vista is currently doing that, has been doing it. B-plus is recognized, or it's not a problem to use B-plus to recharge an aquifer. You can actually water crops with that. You just don't, isn't treated to the point where you're going to drink it.
And there's at no point that would be done.
None.
Okay.
Councilmember Connors.
Thank you, Mayor. Urban enhanced water, what is that?
Good question. Urban enhanced water is UEW, or new term for me too recently, is that in urbanized areas where you have paved roads, paved parking lots, the water that hits that is called urban enhanced water. It would drain out to the nearest wash in the desert.
Okay. And you talk about new water. That's just our effluent generated by the city of Bisbee at the plant.
Exactly.
If this did happen, would that water be exclusively delivered to Horseshoe Draw, or occasionally, Freeport has bought some water from us. Actually, somebody talked to me a little bit before the meeting about that. Cato Daily, as a matter of fact. But yeah, will we still have the option? If somebody like them needed some dust suppression water, could we sell them some?
Ideally, not. This project, if it, we take it to its conclusion, this pipeline, it costs anywhere to $3 to $5 million. We're going to have a firm commitment on that water for a significant amount of time to get people to invest in this project.
Preferably, was what you, preferably not, probably not.
I'm sorry, let me be really clear here. If we're going to be able to get the funding to do this project, we're going to have a firm commitment for that effluent for a significant amount of time.
And then you talked about the lads who aren't wild about this water. Which is it? Is it just science that they don't care for? Is it good or is it bad? If the lads aren't wild about it, but we're hot for it, where's the disconnect?
If we're hot for it, who's we?
We, you, the Cochise County.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The city of Bisbee and this pipeline.
The pipeline would start preferably over on Naco Highway, mm-hmm. So that water would never go through the golf course. It'd never go next to the Arizona Water Company. It would be in a pipe from Naco Highway all the way across underground the Ladd Branch over to Horseshoe Draw. So it would be completely removed from the Ladd property, the golf course, every place.
They're not wild about the way it is right now, where it's discharged to, and the way
right,
things are happening now. So this would actually be better. They'd be happier with it being in a pipe through their property. And okay.
Right.
All right, thanks.
Sure.
Have you received any questions or comments from Arizona Water Company on this or not?
No.
No.
This is a relatively new project. This is probably the first time we've really been out in public to address this. And again, as I said, the Ladd Ranch accepting a pipe across their property was the first domino. Being able to use the city of Bisbee's effluent is our second big domino. If that doesn't fall, then we try something else.
Okay.
Not using the effluent to go on to other projects.
Would ADEQ have a say in the matter?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I think, Ms. Johnson, you've got information on that, don't you?
Certainly. Mayor, members of the council, ADEQ's position, one of the things that they would have to do is do an amendment to the current discharge permit. So as opposed to changing it from Green Brush Draw to Horseshoe Draw, we would just amend the existing discharge permit.
Thank you. Any other council member Dunn?
Mayor, Mr. Call? Clarify for me, what are alternative uses of B-plus water? Is this strictly a liability to us, or is it an asset, potential asset to the city of Bisbee?
The uses for B-plus, and you have to forgive me because there's a whole bunch of them, but...
I have them right here.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan.
Surface irrigation of an orchard or vineyard. Golf course irrigation, restricted access landscape irrigation, landscape impoundment, dust control, soil compaction and similar construction activities, pasture for milking animals, livestock watering for dairy animals, concrete and cement mixing, materials washing and sieving, street cleaning. And then it can also be used for pasture for non-dairy animals, livestock watering, irrigation of sod farms, irrigation of fiber, seed, forage, and similar crops, and silviculture, whatever that is.
Trees. Thank you very much. And, yeah, aquifer recharge. That's we want to make sure. I know that in the past, and I'm not sure you might, I know that for the remediation that Freeport-McMoRan is doing, they've purchased, in the past, they've purchased step one for dust control, I believe. It's also my understanding that that's been ratcheted back pretty far. I don't know the specifics of the contractor detail. Short of that, I've obviously been trying to think of ways that the city of Bisbee could make money on their effluent. Nothing's come to my mind. I don't know. But that's about what Freeport-McMoRan purchased. Certainly, I forget, it was $50,000 for, I forget the specifics of the contract. I knew at one time, but in any case.
Just a side note on B plus water, it's my understanding that most of the time it comes out A plus, correct me if I'm mistaken, Mr. Wallace, you probably know that better than I do.
It is pretty clean. The thing is that as clean as the water test is coming out, if we have a permit for a certain grade of water, that's what you're going to get. And if you pay for more, then you can get higher grade water. That's how the state kind of makes their money on stuff like that. You know, as long as you meet their permits, that's what they call your water. We have very, very clean water coming out.
When we were dealing with the trying to get the golf course up and running, the golf course owners, again, for the second time after discussion, balked at B+. I went to your director at the time, or the, I forget his name, and asked what it would take to upgrade the wastewater treatment plant to produce A+. And the answer at that point in time, and this was about a year and a half ago, was $1.3 million. And so I just sort of knocked it out of the ballpark.
Just another aside, the dedication ceremony of the treatment plant in, I think it was August 2006, one of the engineers came up and began to speak, and he had a glass of water sitting next to the podium, and he said, "This just came out of the treatment plant. I'm going to show you how good it is." And he proceeded to drink the whole glass of water. Mm-hmm. But then he had a caveat. He said, "I don't recommend you all do this, though."
He's still alive, right? We know that.
We're not sure.
Okay.
Any other questions from the council? We have a few people signed up to talk on this, and they may have a question or they may not. Let's go through the list. How about Sharon Rock?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I don't pretend to be an expert at all on this subject. Just actually read my first couple of articles about it yesterday or today, and just reading the Humanure book recently. But I do have a couple of questions I've been able to formulate here. I think I heard Gene Connors asking a question. I don't know if it was answered by you, sir, but I think what he was asking, and I'd like to ask it even if he weren't, is if the lads have a legitimate concern about why they don't want the water on their grazing land and why it would be better to have it in the aquifer than...
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah, go on ahead. Go on up. Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly how to ask that. I wish the labs were here, but they could speak for themselves. I would tell you that B plus is accepted for all those uses, so that's not a problem. But I can also tell you that. And again, I'm really hesitant to speak for the Ladd family, but from what I understand, that water that goes onto that pasture on the east end of their ranch, their feeling is that the grass that grows there does not get as green as the grass in other areas that just grows from the monsoons, rainfalls during the summer. So it's anecdotal, but on the other hand, the family's been doing this for a century or more now. So they believe there's no question there's nitrogen to some degree in B plus effluent. It's allowed. It's fine if you put it in the aquifer as it goes down into the aquifer. It's filtered even more. But if it's possible that the nitrogen in that effluent may be having bad effects on their grassland. But you'll need to talk to the Jack Ladd or John on that.
Another question is the effluent recharging the NACA wells?
I don't know. Mm-hmm.
The wells where our water is being pumped from.
You're talking about the Arizona Water Company well or NACA Sonora wells?
Arizona Water Company.
Well, it doesn't. I don't think it gets down quite that far. It runs down about a mile and a half, would you say, Mr. Call, from the NACA Highway, the affluent? Yeah, it runs down there about a mile and a half or so.
That video I showed you was sort of interesting when I first saw it. You have the NACA sewer ponds. Right next to them you have Greenbush Draw with the B-plus effluent in it. And it goes right past the Arizona Water Company's well bin. Whether or not it gets down to the aquifer, I don't know how deep their well is. You'd have to check with them. But if you look on Google Earth, those three facilities are, they're right next to each other.
Information that I have on that well is about, correct me if I'm mistaken, about 110 feet. But it goes down through a clay base for about 10 feet and pretty much cleans that water up pretty close, pretty good. That's what I understand.
My guess would be that if that B-plus effluent was endangering Arizona Water Company's supply to this city, that well is tested very regularly, that it doesn't have any impact. But again, that's just my guess.
My concern then would be that we'd be taking water from the wells that we're pumping from for our drinking water and moving it over to the riparian area. And I'm certainly in favor of saving the riparian area, but taking perhaps diminishing our drinking water might not be the way of doing that, if that is actually what could happen. One of the articles that I read is from UC Davis, and I sent it to the mayor and council yesterday, so I don't know if any of you have a chance to read either of the two articles I emailed to you. But one of the concerns is that all the risks are not known about pumping effluent into aquifers, even though it's being done a lot. All the risks are not known. And so it may seem like kind of a slam dunk, let's do this kind of thing, but from my best understanding of what I was reading, it's really not just a foregone conclusion that it's a good idea. Also in the effluent, unless the effluent has been treated to make it a really super high quality, like A or whatever it is, A plus, it can still have things in it like hormone disruptors and pharmaceutical drugs and other things that basically then we're just polluting, could be polluting our aquifer or somebody else's aquifer, whatever aquifer. And the other thing I'd like to say is in the reading I've been doing for another project, it seems that groundwater pumping does affect surface flow. And I'm not sure, I'm not an engineer or a hydrologist, and I'm not trying to argue with you folks, but I just want to get these things out there, that there have been scientific studies. I have the book at home. I don't remember what it's called. It's something like The Ecology of the San Pedro River. It's a very thick book with lots of information in it. And it seems conclusive that the groundwater pumping does affect surface flow. So I'm going to presume that there is a relationship, and perhaps it is the development in Cochise County that is affecting the river, the flow of the river. Maybe it is just the rain, you know, the variation in rainfall. If we fix the surface flow of the river in however we do it, another concern of mine is that then it just perhaps gives another green light for more development in the area, and eventually it'll really all catch up with us. I mean, we can't keep just doing more of the same thing and expect it not to impact us negatively. And this may just be a postponement of that and with something that is not necessarily desirable or 100% desirable. I think that's it.
Thank you. Just another comment I'll make. It seems to me that this would be kind of a long process to ever get done. Obviously, it appears to me that the Federal Environmental Protection Agency, because the water would be going into a riparian area river, would probably have some say in the matter as well. So it appears there's lots of barriers you're going to have to jump over. So it's going to be, if it is gets going, it's going to take a while for that to happen. Let's go to another person from the public. How about Cato Daly?
Actually, my questions have been addressed, so I'll pass.
Okay. Jed Witkowski.
Thank you for this time. Well, first off, I want to say I agree with your perspective, and I just something I didn't think about is that how short term, if this does go through, possibly a viable thing, however long term, that may, as you said, make a green light for development. As someone who's grew up in this area, whose roots on this area, that's something I do not want to see, because it does negatively and very quickly affect, adversely so, our local environment, and anywhere that's done. Look at Tucson. So anyway, what I wanted to say is that as I know somebody who was a PSC at a out-of-state wastewater facility and a fellow Kiwanian, and he assured me, and I know he's done the due diligence to have that position he had, and that you can, you kind of touched on this earlier, drink effluent water. Now, I don't know what the rating on that was, is B plus or higher. And most people who grew up rural can tell you that the state does mandate that if you have a septic system, that your drinking well has to be no less than 100 feet from the leach field. All we had was a sediment filter, and all six of his children are still here doing just fine. And so I'm not terribly concerned about the environmental impact that discharging reclaimed water into it will have. I'm more concerned, like you brought up, the long term of more people come here and building up and sucking us dry and kind of negating all that what you worked for in the first place. Thank you.
Thank you, Jed Witkowski. Ms. Blackford, come up. Susan Blackford.
I didn't sign up and I'm sorry, but I just wanted to make a comment. Wouldn't it be nice if we still had our Public Works Director, Tom Kleinmick, here tonight to be able to advise the city manager and the council of what the concerns are, and you could have directed him to look into since he was a public certified engineer. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else would like to go up and speak? Mr. Dwayne Wallace.
Actually, just a little bit. Just a couple things I know from operating the plant out here in the field.
Yeah.
The water that ends up the Ladd Ranch, it doesn't go down in a pipe. It gets dumped, Greenbush Draw, and it runs right through ranch land and everything else. So it's not just our water at that end. It's everything what people throw in there. There's a lot more going on at that end than if we were just to pump it straight. With all due respect, Mr. Kleinmick would ask one of the operators what we thought of of what's going on, because that's the type of engineer he was. Mm-hmm. He wasn't certified as a wastewater operator. I am. I know there's a lot more investigation that needs to go on. However, I think, and you know, I don't work at the plant anymore. I work out mainly in the field. I believe that how fine-tuned they have that plant now, it's going to be the best water you're going to see, you know, without being drinking water. Drinking water, wastewater, effluent, two separate animals. I think people need to get that out of their vocabulary. It's completely different than that. Also, if Arizona had a problem with where we were discharging our effluent, they would definitely let us know. There are a lot of laws as to how sewage and water, potable water, interact. There's a lot. You know, you can't even have two pipes within so many feet of each other. That's all I have. Thank you.
Anybody else who would like to come up and make a comment? One other, maybe a strange thing. I don't recall anybody from that lives in that particular area out there by Greenbush Draw, by the golf course area, has ever come to the city council, or maybe not to the county, has never said a word. Like, all this water pours in, not far from their houses, and I guess it was okay. I find that kind of odd. But anyway, any other questions or comments from the council? No? This was just a discussion item only. I want to thank Mr. Call, Mr. Blahovich, and the various county people that came here this evening. We appreciate that, and it's an interesting thought. And I know it's just in the works, and we'll see what happens. And the city of Bisbee is most of the time easy to work with. Once again, thank you very much for coming. We appreciate that. We will now go to item number 4, discussion and possible direction regarding Arizona Ambulance's request for expanded CON. And the what I need for the public consumption is either Mr. Hansen, Mr. Johnson, or perhaps Mr. Bernalite. Is he still here?
Yes, sir.
To explain what a CON is, so the public knows what they mean by that.
Yeah, Mayor and Council, very quickly, I know you asked for something very short. A CON is administered by the Arizona Department of Health Services, and the purpose is to regulate ambulance service in the state of Arizona and also to make sure that every place has adequate coverage. Our CON is, you know, like I said, is administered by the state, and so we're just here just to talk about some pending litigation as it relates to that particular item, and our CON covers about 400 square miles or so.
So that certificate of necessity will be decided by the Arizona Department of Health Services?
Arizona Department of Health Services, and I just want everybody to know that we were recently, our CON or our certificate of necessity was actually renewed back in August of this year, so this is very, very recent. So obviously we've been doing a pretty outstanding job with what we've been doing as it relates to our paramedicine program.
Is there any indication the time frame of this happening or not happening?
I think we'll kind of discuss those details in executive session.
Okay. We have a few people signed up, two as a matter of fact. Two, I believe. Let's start off with Susan Blackford once again.
Y'all, when I retired, I just wanted to take painting lessons. I didn't want to get this involved, but what's been going on the last couple years in the committee that I represent, we feel that we need to be here. I think me being talking 2-3 times is a little excessive myself, but here we go, okay?
Ms. Blackford, you want to move the microphones down just a little bit more?
Oh, sure.
There we go.
Is that better?
That's much better.
Okay. All right. Good evening again. So many of us cannot believe that this action is being done to the city. I hope the council understands that actions have consequences. To me, in my opinion, that this action tonight is being done as a result of all the talk since 2013 of destroying our great fire department. Let's review the facts. Shortly after taking office, Mayor Badal started in thinking of ways to destroy our fire department. Remember, please, she came back to Bisbee to live after her lobbying attempts to take the water from the New Mexico people failed, proven fact. She claimed that a purchase of a new ambulance in 2013 would not save us any money. And all the quotes that I'm saying tonight are all documented in the copies that I have went and researched at the Bisbee Observer. I have them all here if anybody wants to look at them, or y'all welcome to do your own research. Okay. She claimed that a purchase of a new ambulance in 2013 would not save us any money. And she voted down that purchase along with Dave Smith, Doug Dunn, and Gene Connors, proven fact. She stated like a company like Arizona Ambulance could do the job. Well, they did, taking over $400,000 from us in 2013 and 2014, as stated in the 2015 budget by our city manager. Thus, we had to go into our reserves. Proven fact. All this under the cover of we must be a fire district to survive. Dave Smith stated in 2014 that he would continue Mayor Badal's vision for this town, and he meant every word of it. Over and over again, writing on how a fire district would save us. While he has been proven wrong with the facts as stated by Ken Budge at the last council meeting, showing how it would unfairly cost the property owners and increase property taxes. Remember, Dave Smith declared in the paper in the summer of 2014, before the election, that he had received contributions from the owners of Arizona Ambulance and Jim Dixon. As he stated, he can accept contributions from whoever he wants, and that is right. But think, why these two? Who benefits? All this talk about a fire district has led, in my opinion, this chance for Arizona Ambulance to come in and challenge the Bisbee Fire Department, CON. It is one more action or nail in the coffin for our firefighters, and I don't know why you can't see it. Is this what you want? Then four members of this council, Hansen, Dunn, Connors, and Sullivan, still want us to look into a fire district. Why? Citizens, ask yourself, who is this self-serving? After our great deal with the Palominas Fire District as a backup ambulance service, Arizona Ambulance was not making the money it had done in the past. Let's review the facts on Arizona Ambulance. Arizona Ambulance is owned partly by the owners of AMR, right here on the internet, a private company that takes over small towns' ambulance service. Under a private ambulance, this city would have no say in running of the ambulance service, like how long would it take to respond? What patients would they pick up? What would they charge? Who would they hire for a few? As our population gets older, and hopefully with the new seniors housing center, safety for our citizens should be your first concern. Our fire department is required by contract to respond within 3 to 5 minutes. Under a fire district, they can make up their own rules on their own response time, on their own terms, proven fact. Under Arizona Ambulance's website, it states under Bisbee, Arizona Ambulance Transfer supports Copper Queen Hospital with ambulance MBLS service. Proven fact. Jim Dixon has a contract to use Arizona Ambulance. Proven fact. Jim Dixon is the CEO of the hospital and is in charge of building a new emergency room service in Douglas. And Arizona Ambulance also serves the city of Douglas. Right now, without a CON license, Arizona Ambulance coming up from Douglas, since they don't have their ER yet, They drop off the patients at the Copper Point Hospital, and our fire department takes the patients up to Tucson when needed. Right now, this is a moneymaker for us. And, of course, I feel that we need another ambulance at least. And we'll always need another one. Why is this being done? Ask yourself, who stands to make the money? If they succeed, Arizona Ambulance and Jim Dixon, in my opinion. This town needs to wake up and see what has and is trying to be done in this town in the last 2 to 3 years. We need to take our town back. It is your job, City Council, to protect this town. There has always been disagreements and ideas, and that's okay. But these last 3 years, the ideas, in my opinion, have been all self-serving and a way to destroy this town. We are asking you tonight to do the right thing for this town, where you all live, and see what this action really is about and what damage it can cause if you make the wrong decision. We have one of the best fire departments in the state, in my opinion, maybe America. You do not want to lose this ambulance service and then our fire department. To all our policemen and firemen, thank you for all what you do for this town. On a personal note, we have just lost one policeman to Tucson. We are losing another one, verified, at the end of this month. And you want to know why? Because they don't see any future here, you guys. And that's all your responsibility on this. You can say, oh, I support you. Oh, I support you. But actions speak louder than words. They don't see you supporting them. They see you talking about taking their jobs away with the fire district. They see all that, and they're scared. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Susan Blackford. Next, we have a former council member, Ken Butch.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Ken Budge, Ward 1. I'm not here tonight with a big bunch of facts and figures or anything else. I just want to give you a little history. Now, as you know, I worked in this area for almost 30 years. When I started, our fire department, which was a county fire department, was in the ambulance business. We had my station, a front line, and a back line. Front line was for emergencies. Back lines were for transfers from rest homes, from hospitals to hospitals. And I was basically a first aid, a Red Cross first aid attendant. And we would put the patient in the back, and both of us would sit in the front seat, and we would drive to wherever we were going. Well, pretty soon, EMS started getting better, and we became EMTs. I was one of the first of 600 in the nation to be an EMT. I still remember my number is 664. This continued for a while, but at that point it was in the 70s, and we were having some issues, as everybody does in government, especially with finances. And so we went to the state, and the state allowed us to start charging for ambulance. Before that, it was totally free. It was like, just call, you get an ambulance, they'll take you, it's all part of your taxes. Well, we started charging. And within 6 months, a private ambulance corporation showed up in Salt Lake County at Gold Cross Ambulance. They went to our county commissioners, same as what we call supervisors here, and said, you know, you guys are in the emergency medical business, not in the transfer business. Let us do the transfers. It'll get you out of that problematic, and you'll be able to put more effort into the emergency. And to be quite honest, most of the firefighters said, fine, I don't want to get up at 2 in the morning just to take somebody from a rest home. And they got their, what I will say, the camel's nose inside the tent. And they took over all the transfers within our district. Well, within 2 years, and quite a bit of political contributions and some changes within the county commissioners, they went back to the county commissioners and said, listen, we don't think you should really be in the ambulance business at all. We will take over the ambulance business in your county, and in fact, we will pay you X number of dollars a year in order to take over the ambulance business. the county commissioner said, fine. At that point, our fire department lost all of our ambulances. We just responded with fire trucks and tried to give our basic first aid. Well, wasn't within 6 months that the whole paramedic program started. This was 1975, six. Gold Cross Ambulance, who was running all the emergency medicine stuff, said, we can't afford that. We're not going to do paramedics. So with some support from our county commissioners, they started sending us to school. I was the second group. I was one of 18 paramedics in the state of Utah. Well, what did we do? We ran out of Suburbans. What we do, we put all our gear in the Suburbans, and we would go to the scene, minister advanced first aid, and wait for our ambulance to come from Gold Cross. This continued for over 10 years. And I can sit here for the next half hour and give you example after example. Now, it worked. 80% of the time, the ambulances arrived within reasonable amount by the time we gave our, but 20% of the time, I was sitting there with a critically injured patient, not able to get to a hospital because they were busy doing other things. They would pull their equipment out and send them someplace else on a transfer. They would have to bring another unit in from way far away. Then that unit wasn't covered. This went on for over 10 years. We were so tired of not having really emergency response from an ambulance that a group of us started together, and when we replaced fire trucks, we went to what was called a quint. A quint has a stretcher inside the fire truck. Basically, I call it an ambulance with a fire truck attached to the back. So we went with paramedics. We went with our fire truck. Critical. We grabbed the people, and we headed to the hospital. Well, this upset the private ambulance service quite a bit, as you would imagine, because we started doing transports. They started upping their transfer or their people. I started going by parking lots. They were parked in Walmart parking lots. This is where they would stage them. They didn't even have a station for them. They would show up in the middle of the night to transfer one of my patients. The bed was unkept because they were sleeping in their stretchers and on their back. This is what they had to do in order to try to meet the demand that I'll be honest, right now, the Uniform Fire Authority, which became what my old department was, is now back to a full-fledged EMS, Advanced Life Support, transport unit, and they have basically taken over back to that stage. Gold Cross is still around and still does some transfers. But just food for thought, this is what happens on the progression. So when you go into your meeting this afternoon or this evening, I would hope that you would think this is just my history, and I thought it would be worth sharing it with you. So thank you for your time.
Former Council Member Ken Budge, thank you very much. I will just say this. This is second round that I've had in this particular seat, and I would say in the last year or so, this is undoubtedly, in my opinion, the most important issue that we have dealt with. Any other comments or questions from the council? Pursuant to ARS 38-431.03, the City Council may vote to go into executive session for discussion or consultation for legal advice with the attorney or attorneys of the public body for the discussion or consultation with the attorneys of the public body in order to consider its position and instruct its attorneys regarding the public body's position regarding pending or contemplated litigation. Do we have a motion?
I move that we enter executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03 in order to privately discuss and consult with our attorney about Arizona Ambulance's request for expanded CON in the city of Bisbee.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to enter into executive session. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. We will now go into executive session. Do we have a motion?
We have moved that we come out of executive session.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to come out of executive session. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. We are now out of the executive session. Do we have a motion? Let me just say, city manager's report, he was called away, so we will not do that tonight. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So mentioned. So motion.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The motion passes unanimously. This meeting is adjourned.